stories which other news outlets won't often touch. But Free Speech Radio News can only stay on the air with your financial support. So won't you please make a donation to Free Speech Radio News online at www.fsrn.org. That's www.fsrn.org. Or call 510-287-5551. That's 510-287-5551. Thank you for your support. And you're listening to radio station WBAI New York, where it's 7 o'clock on the nose. Let us rejoice. Time for Off the Hook. Everybody, the program is Off the Hook. Manuel Goldstein here with you for the next hour this week. Some schedule changes, which of course we weren't able to tell you about because we weren't on the air to tell you about them, so we'll tell you about them here. That's that we're not doing the fundraiser right now, as we previously announced. We're doing it next week, and the reason for that is because of the ongoing war hearings that are happening. Yeah. It's exciting coverage that comes to you here on Pacifica Radio, and it's vitally important. I suggest people listen to it tomorrow. It would be kind of unseemly to break away from that to ask for money, but we'll do it if we have to. But what we're going to do instead is postpone the fund drive until Friday and have, as previously scheduled, our special program next week with Kevin Mitnick beginning at 7 o'clock. So that, I guess we could be at war by then, and maybe there'll be special programming. I don't know. Maybe there won't be any programming. Who knows what, we live in a society of flux, let's just put it that way, and nobody knows what will happen next. But if nothing untoward happens, that's the schedule plan, to have Kevin Mitnick here next week as part of the fundraiser. And any further updates, just keep your radio on all the time. That way we'll be able to tell you. Welcome, Mike. How you doing?
I'm all right.
That's cool. And Seraph is here.
Rocking like a hurricane.
Yeah, really. And Jeff, you're over there. There you are.
Yeah, here I am.
How you doing?
I'm good, thanks.
You came in tonight because you thought it was a fundraiser.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah. Well, sorry.
It's okay.
Sorry
to disappoint
you.
I'm staying.
Yeah. If anyone wants to give us, well, you know, anyone wants to pledge money to us, do that next week. Just, you know, make a reminder to yourself. Well, we've got a bunch of things to talk about and demonstrate and do and all that kind of thing. Let's see. Well, let's go into some of the mail we didn't get to last week. A lot of people wrote in concerning the plus one debacle.
Did we get any more hate mail?
We always get hate mail, but I don't know if I brought any of that in. There might be kind of subdued hate, you know, the sarcastic hate that you don't quite get right away until you read the letter on the air, then you realize they were making fun of you. These are all people who are very upset and confused about the fact that here in New York, in the New York metropolitan area, starting in February, actually starting now, but becoming mandatory in February, everybody is going to have to dial an area code in front of every phone call they make, except, I guess, if you're inside an office and you're calling an extension inside the office. But if you're calling another phone in your house and it has the same area code, same exchange, you're still going to have to dial the same area code and same exchange. It's ridiculous. But the thing that really annoys me more than anything is the fact that you have to dial a 1 in front of it. My question is, why in the world do you have to dial 1 when it's obvious that there's no other phone number you can dial anymore. You have to dial 10 digits, unless you're calling the cops or information or something like that. Every area code is going to have to be dialed. So what is the point? It used to be that one, prefacing it with a one, told the phone company that you are about to dial long distance and to bill you appropriately or some nonsense like that. For a long time, I know area code 516 didn't require one, and area code 202, Washington, D.C., also didn't require one. But that changed as they moved to digital switching. But now it doesn't seem like there's any use for it. Anyway, we have a bunch of theories and comments, and some of them are pretty funny, actually. This person has a theory. Why would they add a one at the beginning? Why would they add area codes for local calls? How about this? So that they can sell shorter numbers at enormous cost to businesses. That's from Matthew. Well, Matthew, that's a good theory, but I don't think it's quite right because you won't find them selling you small numbers anywhere. I mean, that'd be kind of cool if they sold you a vanity number, you know, of 1234. You can have that for $50 a month or something like that. Everyone else has to dial 11 digits. You can dial 4. No, it's it doesn't. Everyone's going to be in the same boat here. I mean, the only people that will have speed dial numbers, quick numbers, are people like 911. I don't think that number is up for sale. That's really not it. This person writes in from Brazil on September 25th, off the hook. You were asking, why dial 1 if everybody has to dial 1? What's the point of it? I'm really not familiar with USA phones, and apparently neither are the people who make these rules. I'm from Brazil. I hear off the hook one day after it gets posted on the website. But have you tried other one-digit numbers, like 2 or 3, and see if you get a call completed? I'm not quite sure what this person is asking us to do, to dial 2 in front of the area code or 3 in front of the area code. He seems to think that 1 has to mean something like, hi, I'm a phone user and I would like to make 1 local call. Well, no, I don't think that's it either. That's from Marco over there in Brazil. It's an interesting theory, though, sending a little message before you actually dial the phone number, but no. It's stupidity. It's something that we have in abundance here in America, and perhaps if you visit sometime, you'll see it all over the place. Let's see. How about this one? The one is needed on the 11-digit phone numbers because that is the country code for the USA. Well, that's correct. It is the country code for the USA, but why in God's name would you have to dial the country code when you're inside the country? I guess it's the same kind of logic. Because you're dialing the area code inside the area code, you're dialing the exchange inside the exchange, why not dial the country code inside the country? But I don't think that's the reason that they have for doing this.
Wouldn't that be 0111
plus? No, boy, here we go. 011 is not a country code, all right? 011 is simply what we dial to get access to overseas, all right?
But wouldn't it then be 0111?
Listen to me. 1 is the country code. 011 is nothing. That simply is telling the phone company that you're dialing overseas. If you're in Europe, you dial, I think, 00 to get overseas?
But it's telling them that you're dialing a country code.
It's telling the local switch that you're dialing a country code. Yeah, but it's not the country code.
Well, if 1 was the country code...
It's like dialing 9 when to get out, you know, onto an outside line or something like that. It's not. It doesn't have anything to do with the actual phone number itself. And this person also writes, this person's from New Jersey, by the way. New Jersey has had to dial all 11 digits for almost a year now.
That's true.
And you're from New Jersey.
That's right. That's true.
That explains a lot, doesn't it? Why people act the way they do.
But we're forgetting the financial aspect. It could be that they're going to start charging by the digits as well as time.
They swear they're not going to do that.
Well,
they've gone on the Bible and said they're not going to do that.
Time will tell.
Yeah. Now, you have to do this. You dial a phone downstairs. You have to dial 11 digits. Can you do us a favor? Can you go, not now, but when you get home, dial without the one and see what happens? Or have you tried this already?
Well, if I'm in my area code, I'm okay.
You don't have to dial the one inside your area code.
Not inside.
But you have to dial the area code.
Yes.
But you do have to dial the one outside the area code.
Yes.
Now, that makes no sense at all to me. Okay, this person has a bunch of suggestions, and I think they're pretty good suggestions. Remember when four-digit dialing would get you something, someone in your own exchange? We could get rid of this 11-digit dialing nonsense that the phone company just counted digits before a call, and using the pound sign as a, I guess, kind of like a return or something like that. You dial, using our phone number here, which is 212-209-2900, you dial 2900 pound, you dialed your own line in your local exchange, You dial 2705 pound. You dial a different line in your local exchange. If you dial 209-2900 pound, you dialed your own line with 7-digit dialing. 209-2705 pound, you dialed a different line, 7-digit dialing in your local exchange. Or you dial our old phone number, 279-3400 pound. You dial a different line, 7-digit dialing, foreign exchange, but same area code. It continues on into the area code as well. I guess you always have the option to dial the area code. Anything longer is out of the country. Kind of makes sense, I guess. Why does that have to be so complicated? Overseas, it's not this complicated. It looks more complicated, but it's not. This person writes in saying, I have two cell phones in the 646 area code, one from Sprint and another from VoiceStream, or T-Mobile, or whatever it's called today. I can dial other numbers in the 646 area without dialing 1646. And also VoiceStream or T-Mobile or whatever may become part of Singular. Oh, boy. How many different companies are we going to have to deal with? Mike, you're in 646.
Your cell phone is in 646.
I believe we tried this, where you can dial 7-digit numbers inside 646.
I don't know anyone in 646.
Well, that's because you don't dial. Dial some 7-digit numbers and meet people in 646.
All right.
Thing is, you know, 646 is landlines. 917 is mostly cellular phones and beepers and things like that. Although there are a few landlines now for some reason. Okay, speaking of VoiceStream, T-Mobile, whatever it's called today, OmniPoint was the old name. They've done something monumentally stupid. We've talked about this a couple of weeks ago, where VoiceStream is no more. It's been taken over by a company called T-Mobile, which is actually Deutsche Telekom, a German telephone company. And they've made some changes to the system. They tend to do that when phone companies are taken over. We're going to demonstrate. Well, actually, we can't demonstrate this because you need the actual phone to do this. But they upgraded their telephone system or their voicemail system so that everybody who has voicemail on T-Mobile no longer has to enter a password. Isn't that nice? You don't have to enter a password anymore. So what I'm going to do right now, first of all, before anything bad happens, why are we getting feedback? Okay, that's why. I'm going to dial my VoiceStream number and hopefully be able to fix this before somebody is able to spoof caller ID and enter my voicemail box, which is all you need to do. It's not very hard. The feature is this.
IVS 2600.
The feature basically allows you...
Please enter your password.
...to bypass that if you're using your own phone. So if you call voicemail from your own phone, it assumes that you're you and lets you in without a password.
Invalid entry.
Uh-oh.
Please re-enter your password.
Maybe I'm too late because that was my password. All right.
Now I know your password.
Yeah.
You have no new messages and 11 saved messages. To play your messages, press 1. To record a message, press 2. To change your greeting, press 3. To access your personal options, press 4.
That's the one.
To modify your fax options, press 1.
Never done that.
To access your group lists, press 2.
Never did that.
To modify your message notification options, press 3.
Never did that either.
To modify your personal preferences, press 4.
That's what
I have to do. To modify your forwarding options, press 5.
No, I never did that.
To require your password when calling from your own phone, press 8.
That's what I want. Okay.
Your password is now required.
Thank you. Thank you. Now, everyone has to do that who has that that service, who has VoiceStream or T-Mobile or OmniPoint or whatever it was called when you signed up for them. And the reason for that is security. Anybody can spoof caller ID. It's not that hard. We demonstrated it at H2K2. You can, if you have control over PBX, if you are able to social engineer an operator someplace, you can send whatever number you want as your originating number and show up that way on someone's caller ID. But more importantly, call into someone's voicemail, and the switch will believe that you're that person, not require a password. It's not very smart. Now, we're going to do something else, too. We're going to call these people, these friendly people over at whatever the company is called, and ask them some pointed questions about this, because it's really kind of disheartening what they've done. They've gotten rid of a feature.
While we connect your call.
Okay. They've gotten rid of a feature that most of us are used to. When you get a message
Welcome
on...
Welcome to T-Mobile Customer Care.
Uh-huh.
Para servicio en español, por favor, oprima el número 4.
Not necessary. They've removed the feature...
Please enter your 10-digit mobile number starting with the area code.
I'm not going to do that.
If you are not an existing customer, press 1.
How about if I have a rotary phone? I'm not going to press anything. On voicemail, if I can get this out without the computer interrupting
me... We did not receive a response. Please enter your 10-digit mobile number starting with the area code. If you are not an existing customer...
I'm just going to turn you down until you connect me to a human. When you get a voicemail message on your voicemail, it usually tells you the phone number that they're calling from.
Please enter your 10-digit
They no longer do that. They've taken that away for some reason. Nobody knows why. So we're going to try to find out why and if this was intentional. Maybe it was a mistake. You know, it's always possible.
We did not receive a response.
And while we're...
Please hold while we transfer you to a representative.
Yes, I
won that. For quality purposes, your call may be monitored or recorded.
Okay, and while we're waiting for that to happen, let's talk about our other favorite company, Sprint PCS. Yeah, according to MSNBC... Ooh, touch tones. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
So those touch tones activate the music. Something's happening. More touchdowns. Three touchdowns.
Thank you for calling T-Mobile. All of our representatives are currently assisting other customers. Please remain on the line, and your call will be answered in the order in which it was received.
I'd like to know
Please
how...
remember, our customer care representatives are available to assist you 24 hours a day, so you can contact us at your convenience.
Well, this is my convenience. I'd rather not hear this. I'd like to know what those touchdowns actually do. Okay, this sounds promising. May have actually gotten somebody right away.
Calling T-Mobile. My name is Teresa. How can I help you today?
Yes, can you hear me?
I can hear you.
Hi. I was just wondering, I no longer get the phone number on my voicemail of the person calling me. Is that intentional?
I don't know, but I can help you with that.
Well,
basically, when they call you, mm-hmm. their number used to show up on your voicemail.
That's right. Now it doesn't.
And now it doesn't.
Yeah.
Okay. I can help you with that. What you might want to do is go into your voicemail and go into preferences.
Uh-huh.
And adjust it in there.
You can adjust it in there?
There's all kinds of ways to set up your voicemail in there, yeah.
Uh-huh. And getting caller ID is one of them?
No, caller ID is on your phone.
Well, okay, that's true. But, I mean, on the actual voicemail, to have it announced with the phone, with the message, to say
I
it came from this
it is.
Woman.
Yes, I believe it is.
Okay, I'll give that a try then.
Okay, can I help you with anything else?
Nope, that's fine. Thank
all
you.
All right, thank you for choosing T-Mobile. Have a good day.
You too. Well, it's interesting. You know, I called a few times, actually, about this, and I've gotten calls from people. And this is the first time they suggested doing something like this. The other times they said that it was no longer supported. So I'm not going to bore everybody with my voicemail options, but anybody who has T-Mobile out there or VoiceStream or OmniPoint, maybe they can try that during the show. Call us and let us know if it actually worked. I don't think it will. I don't think preferences has that as an option. I don't know why you would default to turning caller ID off or whatever it's called when it's on voicemail. Okay, going back to Sprint PCS, apparently they're the cell phone company people love to hate. They got more complaints per subscriber than any of the top five carriers over the past year. And as its customers drift away, the company is adding new fees and restrictions. Since the start of the year, it has rolled back the time that night minutes start to 9 p.m. on some plans and has started charging customers airtime for checking how many minutes they have left on their plan. Some customers, typically those with poor credit, are even charged a $3 fee to speak with a customer service agent. We've mentioned most of these things on these airwaves. At Sprint, there is a specific target for customer frustration. And who is that, Mike?
Gee, I have no idea.
You don't know?
No, why don't you tell us?
Claire, friend of yours.
Ah, yes.
Yeah. She is the virtual service representative that answers customer calls. Claire can transform even the most basic customer query or billing question into a nightmarish chase with her tendency to misunderstand speech commands and direct customers to the wrong departments. So, yeah, there's a bit of problems over at Sprint PCS. I think I'm not going to be with Sprint PCS much longer. Reason being that, they annoyed me to hell last month when the bill that that they sent me was a few days overdue, like maybe 3 days overdue. They started calling every day, started leaving voicemail every day, filling up my voicemail box. And this month they didn't send me a bill. I didn't get one at all. Now, they're going to start calling any day now. And when they call, they're going to be met by my obstinate policy of not being able to pay bills that I have not received. And they're going to say something on the order of, sir, you have to pay the bill or we're going to have to disconnect your phone. And I'm going to say, well, ma'am or sir or whatever, I can't pay the bill unless you send me the bill. And it's just going to get worse from there. And I have a feeling this is going to end with somebody getting disconnected.
All right.
that's all I'm
going to
say.
You tell them.
Yeah, I will. No, it's about time I checked out another company and had something else to complain about. I think, you know, Sprint is all, you can't say any more about it. Some feedback about other issues. Dear Off the Hook, I accidentally got Real One. We were talking about that last week. So I checked out the BBC World stream. It seems you do have to pay to access it, as you need a Real Super Pass Europe. Unbelievable. So I figured out a way to charge for that. And that's really bad news because that was the only way people here could see that. And for those who don't know, BBC World is a video stream. Some people wrote in thinking it was an audio stream. No, it's video.
Well, it's both.
Well, yeah, you can hear what they're saying, but, you know, it's
no,
a TV channel.
I mean, there's a radio stream, too.
Well, there's BBC World. Is that what you're thinking of?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's totally, yeah, it's a shortwave service. This is a 24-hour news channel that nobody in this country can get, except if
but they're both
Canadian
called BBC
dishes.
World.
No. BBC World service is not the same as BBC World. BBC World is the TV channel.
Okay.
I have documentation to prove this.
All right, fine.
Yeah. Let's see. This person is interested in running an Ottawa, Ontario, Canada-only rebroadcast stream during Off the Hook. Would that be okay with us? I'm not quite sure. How would you limit it to Ottawa only? Rebroadcast stream. If rebroadcasting over a radio station, that's okay with me, and that's why we'd only be in Ottawa. But a rebroadcast stream only in Ottawa. I don't know. Well, I mean, yeah, by all means, rebroadcast anything you want. That's okay.
The person to email is Junes.
Yeah,
Juntz at 2600.com. Yeah.
And, yeah. Or you can email all of us at OTH at 2600.com. That works, too. Except for now, DSL's down. Can you believe that? DSL just down. No reason. Nobody knows. And when there's three companies involved, we have our provider, we have the provider's provider, and we have Verizon. They all point fingers at each other, and that takes about 2 or 3 days before they sort it out. And, maybe it'll get fixed. So email us by all means. It'll sit in a queue somewhere and eventually get to us. Hopefully by next week. FCC news. Armed with several studies that make the case for a radical overhaul in the nation's media ownership rules. Doesn't that sound so good when you say it that way? But when you realize what they're actually saying, it's horrible. FCC Commission Chief Michael Powell told Wall Street yesterday to expect a vote on changes by next spring. Actually, he told them this last week. I'm reading a story from last week. Most of the media ownership rules are old. The media industry has changed. Changes in the current regulations would pave the way for community radio, alternative ownership, more radio stations? No. It would pave the way for companies such as Viacom and News Corporation, who figure they don't have enough power as it is, to own TV stations and newspapers in the same city. They also want the FCC to axe the rule that forbids broadcasters from reaching more than 35% of the national audience. They'd like to reach everybody. Well, we'd all like to reach everybody. But it's not like there are infinite resources here. The study, this is interesting too, the study found network-owned affiliates produce more local news than local affiliates, turning the argument for the rule on its head. Now, okay, let's look at New York, all right? Now, first of all, where is there an independent station, you know, that's not part of a network of some sort? I don't think there are any left. They say that network-owned affiliates produce more local news. Everything is owned by a network. And I don't think there's much local news being produced by, you know, I'm not going to pick on a particular radio station, but those radio stations that are playing music all the time. I don't know what where we fit in. Are we considered network-owned because we're owned by Pacifica? Or I mean, Pacifica owns five stations, so I don't think we're in the same ballpark as Clear Channel. And we certainly produce a hell of a lot more local news than anybody anybody in the city put together, I think. So I don't know. They're playing around with words here. Another study found the proliferation of independent news outlets in a survey of 10 major markets since 1960, a factor that could challenge the so-called duopoly rule, which caps the number of TV or radio stations that can be owned in a single market. It's not looking good. Not looking good for alternative radio. What else is not looking good? Jeffco stores. Have you been to a Jeffco store? I don't even know where they are, but they're some part of the country. Jeffco stores are going to be requiring fingerprints to go shopping. consumers who use checks or credit cards will have to give their fingerprints to merchants. It's a new tactic. Actually, you know what? I think Jeffco, according to this particular news report, means Jefferson County, which... In typical Net style, they don't say where Jefferson County is, and there's probably a Jefferson County in every state. So somewhere there's a Jefferson County near you. You should be careful. The tough touch pads, rather, are easy to use and don't leave residue on your finger. Police agencies say the policy has resulted in less check fraud, probably because less people are going shopping. They are now asking all merchants in the county to require fingerprints. The important thing about this to remember is that it doesn't put an honest customer's fingerprint into a database somewhere. The only people who are actually going to have their fingerprints processed are the crooks. Does that make any sense?
I mean, how do you do that?
How do you process something to find out if it's a crook without processing it? Maybe maybe they use a retinal scan to see if you're honest or something like that. The fingerprints will be kept on file until the transaction's clear. If there's a problem, the prints will be passed along to investigators. How many times has it been a problem? You know, I was using my credit card on one of the MetroCard machines earlier, and there was a problem. And it wasn't my fault, but there was a problem. So does that mean my fingerprints will be passed along to the MTA? Hey, speaking of which, where's Jin?
I don't know.
Maybe the MTA got it.
Maybe you touch the screen and they could have your fingerprints.
You're
then
right.
If you really
you don't
want
to touch
be paranoid.
They trick you. They're probably grabbing your fingerprints there. Anyway, the new policy will take effect throughout Jefferson County in the next few weeks. So if you live anywhere near Jefferson County, wherever that is, here's a hint. This story came to us on the net from something called Nine News. So if you have a TV station called Nine News, that's probably your Jefferson County. Although it's going to be every Jefferson County soon, I'll bet. Some people notified us of potential problems, which I think are kind of funny. This person goes to namedroppers.com, where you can type in any word and get all the domains that use it. I typed in 2600, and it said that there are 199 domains registered. A lot don't work. Most are pretty lame. But one of them was called 2600hacker.com. I tried it out only to end up at a greatdomains.com site. And smack in the middle of the page, it says, to make an offer on this domain name, please enter an amount below in U.S. dollars. The minimum offer amount is $20,000. Yeah. Above that, it says list price $30,000. I had no idea your name was worth so much. After sitting on the page for 20 seconds, it redirects you to greatdomains.com, where they list other domains that they are squatting on. Kind.com is going for $15,000. We're more expensive than kind.com. Swap.com, $25,000. And some of the big ones, USAmerica.com, $100,000.
Doesn't even make sense.
No, it doesn't. I mean, I almost said USA America, which... I guess if I was more clever, I could figure out a way to say that where it sounded good, but that's $100,000 for USA America. Litigate.com, $150,000. and it just goes on and on. And letting you know, someone is trying to make a great deal of money off your name, signed Mike from San Diego. Thanks for that info. And it's true. People are out there trying to use familiar names to make money, and it's pretty sleazy. But what are you going to do? We got a letter from a lawyer, a real letter from a lawyer, in an envelope and everything. Dear 2600 Magazine, I write to alert you that you may be the victim of cyber squatting. It's nice to be the victim occasionally instead of being accused of cyber squatting. Someone has registered a domain name that is confusingly similar to your domain name, 2600.com. Specifically, someone has registered www.2600.com. Yeah, you know, without the dot. Yeah, this domain name is identical to yours, except for the addition of www at the beginning of it. The likely purpose of this domain name is to divert internet traffic that is intended for your website by taking advantage of a typing error, omitting the period between www and the domain name that users commonly make when searching the internet. Indeed, this is probably the most common error that users make when entering a domain name. This form of cyber squatting allows a bad faith registrant to redirect to its own website internet traffic that is intended for your website. In doing so, the bad faith registrant can misappropriate your economic opportunity or create the impression that its website and the content thereof is your website or is affiliated with you. My law firm specializes in intellectual property litigation and has particular expertise in litigating domain name disputes, and this goes on and on. Attorney's fees will vary from attorney to attorney. My law firm will bring a UDRP administrative proceeding for this type of cyber squatting for a flat fee of $5,000. I don't know what to consider this. Is this spam? Is this a cyber squatting thing of its own? I mean, you know, what's to say these people don't register names and then send out these letters? What's to say that they just are looking for this kind of thing all over the place? I did look at the site, and the site simply redirects to us. So, I mean, that's fine. I don't care. It's perfectly okay. But it's kind of weird to be getting letters from lawyers urging you to take action against somebody. You know, usually, don't you call a lawyer to take action against somebody? They don't call you. Or it just seems very, very strange. And these
must
folks,
be a slow week.
Well, I don't know. Do you think they just scan through various domains and try to find things that they could, you know, fight in court?
No, I think what you said before is probably closer. They probably own it.
I don't know about that. I don't know.
Oh, you're right. You're
I don't
want to be direct to you.
Yeah, because you're not lawyers. You know, I don't want to accuse them of anything. But their names are Turner Green. Oh boy. Afrasiabi and Arledge LLP. They're in Costa Mesa, California. And their website is turnergreen.com. So people feel like suing somebody. I guess these people are hungry for the activity. Okay, new action in the world of piracy. You seen this one? This is from Time Magazine. The slumping record industry's best hope is glue. That's right. To combat online piracy, Epic Records has started shipping music critics personal CD players that are glued shut, sealed inside the Walkmans to prevent any unauthorized copying or upcoming releases by Tori Amos, Pearl Jam, and Audioslave. And there's a picture of a little Walkman here that's sealed shut. It's a low-tech response to a high-tech problem, said Epic spokeswoman Lisa Markowitz. A Walkman costs $50, and we could be saving hundreds of thousands of dollars by preventing this music from getting out. Of course, don't they want the music to get out? Isn't that why they make records in the first place? Anyway, critics are asked to return the CD player, and the first critics who were sent the Pearl Jam album, shockingly, all did so. After that, the players are recycled for other critics, like a lending library. And as for the high-tech method for sealing up the players, we have two wonderful guys who sit with little masks on, gluing these things shut. That is the record industry's solution to piracy, gluing CD players shut. I think there's all kinds of symbolism in there.
Did you hear about the pirate ship?
Pirate? No, you have to tell me about this.
There's a pirate ship, apparently, in Asia somewhere that it goes off the coast, you know, a few miles or whatever, and copies CDs and then comes back. I don't understand the point. But
yeah, you're not
really
joking.
Funny.
This is pirate ship
there's
out there.
There's a pirate ship.
Uh-huh. Where did you read this, just out of curiosity?
I read it online.
Oh, but it's got to be true.
It's got to be true.
And it's got a little CD and crossbones underneath.
Yeah. Mickey Mouse's days at Disney could be numbered, and paying royalties for warbling George Gershwin tunes could become a thing of the past if the U.S. Supreme Court sides with an internet publisher in a landmark copyright case this week. In fact, this case was heard today in the Supreme Court down in D.C. One of our people sat outside, Mackie, who you may know, sat outside the Supreme Court all night waiting to get into this, and I haven't heard from him since. He's probably fallen asleep now. So we have no idea what happened inside there. But that was the case that basically it could plunge the earliest images of Disney's mascot and other closely held creative property into the public domain as early as next year. If upheld, the precedent-setting challenge could cost movie studios and heirs of authors and composers millions of dollars in revenue as previously protected material becomes available free of charge. At issue is a 1998 law that extended copyright protection an additional 20 years for cultural works, thereby protecting movies, plays, books, and music for a total of 70 years after the author's death, or for 95 years from publication for works created by or for corporations. So basically what they do is they keep extending this and making it far into the future when these works will become part of the public domain. This case will decide whether or not that actually is allowed to stand.
You know, if I were Walt Disney, I would want Mickey Mouse to be in the public domain.
What does Mickey Mouse being in the public domain mean, anyway? We can put Mickey Mouse in the front cover of 2600? Well, we've done that already, so...
No, we have. But, I mean, isn't that the point at which something becomes a classic when you can, buy it as part of a Dover book, or it's otherwise just everywhere because there's no copyright on it anymore?
I don't know what they're so worried about. I don't know what... This is really pretty silly, but hopefully this case will knock them on their ass a little bit, because... It's really gotten a bit crazy as far as extending these things into infinity. It goes against the whole purpose of what copyright was all about. Look at the time. We should be taking phone calls, 212-209-2900. Let's see if I can fit in one or two more stories here. The space shuttle launched a couple of days ago, and this one was interesting because they attached a camera to the side of it. That's right. The camera was attached to the shuttle Atlantis as it soared into orbit on Monday. The shuttle cam view started with the launch pad and then the whole launch site, then all of Cape Canaveral and the eastern seaboard as Atlantis blasted off and climbed higher and higher. I tried to find this. You know, I even went to the NASA website, and they had video of this, but it cut off after a minute and a half. So if anybody has the actual video of this camera outside, the video that the camera shot outside the space shuttle as it went up into the sky, I think that'd be really cool to see. You know, see the whole United States and then the whole Earth or whatever. I think it runs for about 30 minutes. I'm not sure how far the space shuttle gets in 30 minutes, but that's one way to find out. So email us if you know how to get a hold of that. It's pretty cool. Cameras on space shuttles. Why didn't anybody think of things like that? Because nobody thinks of things like that. Okay, 212-209-2900 is our phone number. We have some phone calls online already, so let's see what's out there. And good evening. You're not on the air. You're on the air. These phones are moving faster than I can keep up to them. Yes, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to say, the Jefferson County thing about the fingerprinting?
Yes.
Yeah, that's actually in Colorado. I read the same story last week on... I think it was the Judge Report had the same thing.
Okay.
It's, Colorado.
Jefferson County, Colorado. Okay,
yeah.
that's good to know. And living proof of how BAI listeners can always provide you with information almost immediately.
Take it easy.
Okay, thanks for your call. Let's go over here now. Good evening, you're on the air.
Hello?
Speak up, please. Go ahead.
I'm here.
Yes, what's on your mind?
I was going to say about the thumbprints.
Yeah.
Actually, it's not the first time it's been used. Back in 79, I worked someplace, and they did that.
In stores?
Yeah, retail stores. It was a stereo store. They got ripped off a lot. But anyway, it was only the people that, like you read on the thing, that the people that ended up not paying the bills and so forth that ended up getting busted.
But was this just one store's policy?
Yeah, it was.
See, now what they're talking about in Jefferson County is every business.
Well, you know, considering the fact that it was done back in 79, I mean, you sound kind of surprised that it's starting. I find it kind of weird that more people aren't using it, as much as I don't like it.
Well, more people aren't using it because there's been such an outcry about privacy rights, and I think there's less of an outcry now because people think that somehow it makes them more secure to give up their privacy.
No, I don't think it's more. I think if you ever own a business or run a business, and you experience how many people actually do try and rip you off, you do try and come up with things like that. I'm not saying I agree with it totally.
Well,
but
you know, there are technological solutions as far as, having particular numbers on credit cards that only the owner is supposed to have.
Mm-hmm.
How were people getting ripped off?
Well, the credit card bill would go through, would mm-hmm. be approved, and then a month later the store would get, say this is stolen, this has been stolen, it's been gone, and, a court case would ensue.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'd need evidence to the fact. And
but if it's a store, I assume it's a store people walked into?
Mm-hmm.
Well, then they had possession of the credit card, and if they had possession of the credit card, the merchant is not responsible.
But they turned out it was stolen, and then the store would have to go.
No,
the store would have to go to court.
If they were satisfied that the person was who they said they were, for instance, the signature has to match on the back of the card and on the piece of paper, then the merchant is not liable. That's why they're supposed to look. They're supposed to compare. A lot of times they don't. And if they don't do that, then they are liable.
Well, I'm just saying that I spent a few times in court fighting over it. I'm not saying I'm for it. I'm just trying to say that you might want to look at other sides of it rather than...
Well, you know, they will always say, and the laws do vary from state to state, that is true, but they will always say that that if you give up some of your privacy, that somehow that's going to make things more secure. I don't know if this is true in this case. Giving your fingerprint when you make a purchase...
Wait a minute. You don't have any privacy if you pay with a check or credit card.
Well, I mean, you're not giving out your DNA, you know, to...
No. I know a lot of people are very fearful of it, and I agree to a certain extent, but I also know from the viewpoint of working at a store or being a part owner or something that, you know, you do end up getting screwed down the line, and you do, you know, tend to do these sort of things. And that's all I wanted to say.
Okay.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks for your call. Let's know what other people think about that. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air.
I don't understand if they say that honest people's fingerprints are not in the database, how it would work, because obviously that means it can't be confirming that you are who you say you are, because if honest people's fingerprints aren't in there, it can't do a check that way. So I guess it would mean perhaps that it can tell whether you've been convicted of credit card fraud or bad checks in the past, but that would mean that if you ever were convicted of that, I guess you would give up for life your right to ever use a check or a credit card again.
Yeah, what would happen if you were writing good checks, you had written bad checks in the past, would you be flagged for that reason? And if you just continue to write bad checks all the time, well, odds are you're just going to get somebody else to, like, go in on the scheme with you whose fingerprints are not in a database.
Right. I don't see, unless they did really have a database that had everybody's fingerprints and was checking your identity, how this is supposed to work at all. It doesn't seem to make sense to me.
No, it doesn't. It's to me, you know, whenever I see things like this, I'm always very wary that it's actually just part of a bigger plan to, I guess, make us get used to the fact that our fingerprints are being given out to various agencies without our control.
Right.
We've given up Social Security numbers as being private at all. We give those to everybody. You know, we were talking to T-Mobile before, and you can't get an account with that phone company unless you give them your Social Security number. What does it have to do with Social Security? Nothing. But we've given that up. And if we're not careful, in 10 years, we'll be giving fingerprints to phone companies to get accounts.
The other thing that was interesting about the story was that the police were encouraging all the merchants to use it. I hope the merchants have enough sense to say, well, no, we're not going to subject our customers to that.
Well, I mean, you heard what the previous caller, who was a merchant,
I'm a merchant, too, as a matter of fact. I have an Internet-based business, and, you know, we do put up with some credit card fraud.
Well, Internet is totally different, and I have some degree of familiarity with that. Obviously, fingerprints aren't going to do you a whole lot of good.
And what I want to say, it's not terribly... You know, maybe we're lucky as a merchant, but it's not a terribly horrible problem. There's some level of fraud. You build your awareness of that into your business. If you follow some common sense rules, you can, you know, if I get an order for $3,000 to be shipped to Bulgaria, which is charged to a woman who lives in Peoria, you know, you realize that there's something funny with that particular transaction.
Right. If you're aware of the problem, there are things you can do to counter it, both in real life and online. A lot of people aren't aware of this, and the companies, the credit card companies themselves, they don't go to very much effort to let merchants know this, and especially online merchants. They're 100% accountable for fraud because they don't have possession of the credit card.
Right.
So they have to be especially careful, and you know, this talk of, you know, it resulting in higher rates for us and the credit card companies eating the you know, the charges. It's not true. It's the merchants that eat the charges on those kinds of things.
And my experience as a merchant is you don't really need a high-tech invasive of people's privacy to deal. The problem is not, to me, it's not that serious that would require the kind of draconian solutions that are always being proposed for.
Okay. Thanks for your call.
Thank you.
212-209-2900. Good evening. thank you for calling us. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Hey, I'd like to know, where can I get a video stream of the BBC World, as shown on PBS?
Oh, boy. Everybody asks this question. Well, it used to be available. You used to go to bbcworld.com and see it there. Now you have to be part of some real one-player thing where you pay for it. All it takes, really, is somebody in Canada or somebody who has access to it somewhere setting up a video stream and putting it on the net and having some bandwidth. Of course, you'll wind up getting sued. I don't know who you get sued by, because I think the BBC would want people to see what they're broadcasting. Maybe you'll get sued by Real Player because they have exclusive rights to it. I don't know. But that's really the only way. The other way to see it, of course, is to somehow get it onto your TV set, which in this country is almost impossible. But we get asked this question all the time, and unfortunately it's not as simple as it used to be. And, of course, there's also the shortwave service, which anybody can get with a shortwave radio. I think 5975 is the frequency you'll hear in this country. You're nodding, is that right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
How's the reception on that? Because it's not broadcast to North America anymore. It's broadcast to Europe. But we can still hear it.
At night.
Yeah, at night only. Okay. It's getting harder to hear alternative news of any sort. Good evening. You're on the air.
Oh, hi. With the fingerprinting and the checks, I believe that the system is that you give your fingerprint, it doesn't actually check it at the time of the transaction. If the transaction bounces, then they would keep the fingerprint and submit it to law enforcement authorities to help track you down.
Okay, but my problem with that is, how do you know that they've gotten rid of it in the first place?
Well, I'm not arguing with that. I'm just saying, you know, argue the point on its merits. You're talking about, you know, people were discussing it as having been, it gets scanned at the time that you're making the transaction and it checks if it's valid or not, and that's not what's happening.
At least not now. It could happen.
Yeah, I mean, anything could happen, sure.
Right.
I mean, you know, I think this is ridiculous. And, but, you know, at least just argue it for what it is.
Mm-hmm. Well, we don't know what it is because we haven't seen it. So it could be anything, you know?
From the description in the article, it was pretty clear to me that, you know, it's a catch after the process,
mm-hmm.
not a catch before the process.
Well, again, if somebody is actually in Jefferson County, we'd like to know exactly what it is that, you know, is going on with that. And, you know, other merchants, too. There are other places that are using this kind of system currently.
Yeah, but with credit cards also, the credit card companies say that merchants are not allowed to ask for identification for you to make the transaction. All you need to do is to present the credit card and sign and have the signature match what's on the back. And
well,
that's all they can require.
In New York State, that is true.
On the MasterCard website, that's what it says.
Okay, then it might be a MasterCard thing then that
and
exists
Visa
in all
too,
states.
I believe.
Oh, Visa and MasterCard are virtually identical.
Yeah, right.
But if there's an exception to that, if your signature is not on the back of your card or if it's illegible or something, if they don't see it there, they can ask for ID there.
Yeah.
And that's that happens a lot. Yep. All right?
Cool.
Thanks for calling.
What I understood that used to happen with the check is you would actually put your fingerprint on the check, and if it bounced, it came back to them. Otherwise, it would get processed and come back to you.
Except you don't get checks anymore.
I do. My bank does.
A lot of banks don't send you the checks anymore.
Okay.
So they wind up someplace else. Who knows? But fingerprints are only one thing they could do. They could do all kinds of other invasive type of things. The thing is, once these tools get put into place, they stay. So that's why we have to be very careful with this. You know, if we say, okay, let's give this a shot, it's going to be the norm. It's going to be what we're using all the time. So that's why you have to be extremely careful. 212-209-2900. Good evening. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I'm in the 212 area code in mm-hmm. Manhattan in a business, and we call people in different area codes, New York City, sometimes Long Island, and it happens a lot, then it won't happen, then it happens. You call clients, their answering machine kicks in, you hang up, they call you back. It's like the phone company's getting a double fee. They get my fee to them
mm-hmm.
at the business rate, but now they're popping them a bill. And I complained to a lot of people, do you know what's going on? And I was just wondering if you're aware of that. It happened today with five different area codes.
Well, okay, now basically, I missed part of what you were saying.
I have a business phone
right.
account with...
Which means that you pay a lot more right there.
Yes,
okay.
Because they even break Manhattan up.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I call above 14th Street, it costs me more money. I'm on 5th Street.
Really? That yes. I did not know.
It's outrageous. But the thing I'm getting is they just doubled their fee, and it's been going on for over a year. And I would just like you to put it out there to other listeners.
But when somebody calls
you. If I call somebody in 718 area code, they're not home, their machine kicks in, we go, dang it, we hang up.
Right.
And then the phone rings and it's their machine. So they get a bill for calling me. And this happens in Long Island.
Why did they get a bill for calling you? Because they call you back.
It's a long-distance call for them if it's another business.
It's actually called long-distance? Inside Manhattan, it's called long-distance?
On a commercial phone account, even within Manhattan, above 34th Street's more money, above da-da-da-da-da-da. But the thing I'm pointing out to you is that this... I mean, they're getting a double... They're charging the other end a fee when I call them because they had no volition. And we get this call back. It comes from Long Island. It'll come from other boroughs of the city. And I was just wondering if you guys were aware of it.
I wasn't aware of how much it cost to have a business line. Actually, at the conference, we had to install a line to demonstrate the caller ID games that we were playing. And inside a hotel, you can only have a business line. And it wound up costing over $1,000 just to have a phone line put in for 2 days.
But I meant the callback feature, because that screws the other guy who was innocent. In other words, they...
But when you have a business line, things that don't cost money ordinarily cost a whole lot more. So if you were a resident and the same thing was happening, you probably wouldn't be paying anything for this, right? To have somebody call you back.
I don't know. What I mean is I'm sure that when I called somebody in Brooklyn, they got nailed a bill for calling me. When their machinery calls me back after I hang up.
I'm kind of unclear. Why is their machinery calling you back exactly?
We don't know. It has to be somebody's software. It's found money for the company. And that's why I'm asking if it happens to other people.
I've never heard of that. I mean, what does it do when it calls you back? Does it say something?
Their machine. Then we hang up.
Okay.
If we call 716 Buffalo, we'll hang up. Dang it, they weren't in. And then... bling, bling, and it's their voice, their machinery.
You know
their hello.
What it might be is, do you have three-way calling on the line?
No.
You might without knowing it. And you might be doing is flashing the switch hook and then hanging up, and then the call that supposedly you put on hold is calling you back.
That's a very good point.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you, we just hang up.
Does the message start at the beginning, or is it like sort of in the middle?
No, we'll give up the minute we find out an answer machine is... We'll just hang up the phone, and dang it, we get a call back. And it's been going on for a year, but not all the time.
It sounds like it's calling you back with that same call. That's my theory.
Thanks a lot.
All right. Hopefully that solves your problems. But again, you know, they put three-way calling on phone lines, and then they charge you 75 cents every time you make a three-way call without telling you.
It happened to me this weekend on my cell phone. A friend tried to call me. They couldn't get through. But my phone rang. I picked up the phone. It was their message on their machine.
Oh.
And then they had to call me back.
Yeah.
So it was strange.
Yeah. And all cell phones have call waiting and three-way and all those kinds of things. I don't think you can even take them off. I think you're stuck with those.
I don't use it.
Yeah. Well, you did that time. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call. This is an easy question.
Yes.
I'm in Manhattan, and I just want to know, what do you dial if you want to check the ring on your own phone? What number?
It depends. Where'd you say you were?
In Manhattan, 646.
Okay, it was 660 plus either the last four digits of your number or the last seven digits of your number, and I've seen in some cases even the full area code plus phone number. Sometimes you dial 660 and you get another dial tone, then you dial that number, and what happens is after you dial the right number, you get a dial tone or some other type of a tone, you flash the switch hook, hang up, and it should ring back.
What's switch? What's just one more time. 660.
And that's where it gets kind of strange because it's different for every exchange. It could be 660 plus the last four digits of your phone number. It could be the whole seven digits, or it could even be the whole 10 digits, or it might not work at all. You know, there's all different ways. But if it does work, you'll know because you'll hear the dial tone or some other kind of a tone after you finish dialing the last number, and then at that point you hang up, pick up again, and hang up, and it should ring.
Hang up, pick up again, and hang up?
Yeah, and then it should ring. That's flashing the switch hook.
All right, thank you.
Good luck with that. Yeah, ringbacks. They used to be a lot more fun, you know? Because they all kind of work the same way. And, I don't know, it's Not as much fun anymore. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Oh, the BBC World stream, I think they did away with the 100 and 300K streams, but I think you can still get like a low-res 56K stream.
Where's this?
I'm not sure. The computer's not right. I'm not on right now, but I think the 56K stream's still going.
Uh-huh. But where is... What site is this?
Well, I think it's coming from them.
Uh-huh.
It's coming from them.
But what site are you connecting to get this?
You know what? I don't have the computer on right now, so,
okay.
I can't tell you. I'm sorry.
All right.
The high bandwidth streams disappeared, unfortunately.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, I have a question for you.
Yes.
First of all, you made a movie about Kevin Mitnick, right?
Freedom Downtime, yeah.
Right. Do you sell that movie?
It's on our internet store, which...
I'm just curious what your position is on the fact that, you know, it was on Usenet and I downloaded it.
That's fine. If you saw it that way, that's great. I mean, we want it to get out. You know, that's the whole reason we made the film.
Okay.
I mean, you know, if you buy it from us, you get the nice packaging and you have a videotape. That's kind of cool. You know, probably better quality, but it's your choice if you want to buy it or not.
Okay.
All right?
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Let's see if we have time for one more phone call. Good evening. You're on the air.
Hello. Yes, I'm calling actually about an internet problem. I hope you can address it. I've never had this happen before. I've had my domain name stolen.
Uh-oh.
I run a couple small websites. They're not commercial, but you know, they're for sports and they're for women, and they have some traffic on them. And my company went out of business. I use small hosts usually.
Uh-huh.
It just went out of business and disappeared, and I've had that happen before, so I thought I'd rebuild. But the domain name seemed locked up because they're out of business. They can't do the permission format of the DNS change. So I thought I would just let it expire and buy it back and just
start. Someone else grabbed it.
No. Oh. I think they grabbed it. I think they grabbed all of their clients' names, and I think they did DN. No. It's in my name. It's still valid to me. It hasn't expired yet. I know the date.
I
have about 4 months to go.
Okay,
to work.
We're kind of out of time here, so I don't really have time to go into this very much. But have you just tried paying for it and see what happens?
I can't. They've stolen it and they re-registered it at a new registrar's office. And
if you let it expire even a day, they can do things like that.
It didn't expire yet. It didn't. It has about 4 months to go before expiration.
Then they shouldn't be able to get away with this. You might want to try calling the personal computer people who are here right now. In fact, and
because I'm it's a very reputable company that registered it, and I'm dealing with them.
I wish I could spend more time on this, but unfortunately, our time is done. So if you want to call back next week or call the personal computer people, maybe they can help as well. That's it for us here off the hook. We'll be back again next week with Kevin Mitnick, our special fundraiser, and we'll. See you then. Stay tuned for the personal computer people. See ya.
WBAI Arts Magazine, Tuesdays, 2 to 3 p.m., featuring rhymers, mimers, and old ragtimers, horn blowers and tapestry sewers, smart headlines and art deadlines, movie messiahs and art gallery pariahs. The WBAI Arts Magazine, Tuesdays at 2 p.m.
We can chase down all our enemies. We can even bring them to their knees. Yes, we can bomb the world into pieces, but we can't bomb it in to peace.
You're listening to non-commercial, listener-sponsored WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City.
But we can love the world to pieces, and yes, we can love it in to peace, y'all.